Hey, super friends. So this weekend is Stanley's LA Comic Con, and I am so excited. We're going to be on the floor today, and a lot of other Meltdown Network podcasts are going to be there. So come check us out. Look for our podcasts. I'm going to Anime Attic for sure. It's going to be awesome. So yeah, come hang out and spend the weekend with a bunch of nerds like myself. Stanley's LA Comic Con, October 27th to the 29th. I'll be there. I'm going to even sleep there. So let's do this.
Ooh, super friends with Eric Esquivel.
Welcome back to Super Friends. I am so excited because today I'm joined by probably the only guy who likes Superman more than me in the entire world, Jerry Gaylord. Jerry, the comic creator, animator, writer, artist. Jerry, thanks for coming in today, man.
Oh, no, thanks for having me. I'm totally. Very, very excited.
Yeah, and today the book that you chose to speak about was Kingdom Come.
Yes.
The phenomenal, phenomenal Superman book.
Yeah, definitely. It's got to be my top 10, maybe top two.
So you and I met working at Boom Studios together. We worked on a book called Loki, Ragnarok and Roll.
Yes, that
and,
is true.
Yeah, we did a bunch of conventions together. I have never seen you in anything but Superman t-shirts. Like my entire life. I think just, yeah. And it's not always at Comic Cons that I've seen you. So wearing a Superman shirt.
So I had to, I noticed in all my convention photos I'm wearing a bunch of Superman shirts. So I stopped for a while. I'm still wearing them in my personal life.
Yeah, as you should.
Not so frequently at conventions.
Gotcha. Because you're a versatile guy. You've worked on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The cartoon recently. Mm-hmm. Which incarnation was that?
Ultimate Spider-Man on Disney XD.
Awesome. Because you're a Warner Brothers guy right now, right? You're working
yes.
on. Can you say what else you're working on?
Yeah, I'm working on Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. It's on the Boomerang app Warner Brothers.
Very, very cool.
It's fun. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
I'm a huge fan of your Ultra Boy character too.
Oh, Hyperboy.
Hyperboy side.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool. He's my creator own character.
Yeah.
And we featured him in the Blueprint with Identity Comics. That's my studio, my group. And so all of us, Brian Turner, Penelope Gaylord, mm-hmm. My wife, like we put all our ideas together, mm-hmm. and Hyperboy is the first story in the book, and it's something I've been working on since I was like in high school. So it's it's got a lot of evolution in it, but he's very much a Superman inspired character.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, you can tell it right from the book. he's a very like Silver Age kind of very fun Superman character, not the brooding
character that we see
in Kingdom Come.
Definitely,
it's inspired by like the earlier stuff, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about why Kingdom Come resonated with you so hard. You said that was your favorite Superman story.
I think it's because I think when I was in high school, I really enjoyed The Dark Knight Returns.
Sure.
And that's like maybe a weird thing for me to say because of how Superman comes across in that. But I think, you know, it works for that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the story that they're trying to tell. And I think that Kingdom Come is the Superman version of Dark Knight Returns. Like it's Dark Knight Returns for Superman.
Yeah. It's the last Superman story, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they nail the characterization. You know, it's all these different things. It's Superman versus Batman, but like it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And, it comes together in a way that makes sense for like all the different characters and what their personalities are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the book, it's by Mark Waid, who I'm a huge fan of. I think you are as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I met him for the first time at, I think Boston Comic Con last year. He was like super cool. He was just sitting, we were tabling right next to each other. Mm-hmm. It was like super cool.
It's funny, at this point in his career, he was sort of just a journeyman creator. Mm-hmm. He was like a guy who just like myself, just kind of is in there to fill in between superstars. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a superstar himself yet. And Alex Ross was really the guy who carried this book. He was all the fans loved. He's this gorgeous, realistic painter. And it was a little bit of an odd pairing. I know it was Alex Ross's initial pitch. Mm-hmm. So he turned in sketches and an 8-page document with like plots and character breakdowns. Mm-hmm. And in his pitch, Dr. Fate was in it and he was a dolphin. They're like really weird, far out, trippy, like DC concepts. Mm-hmm. And they used a lot of them in this book. There's crazy guys with like 666s over their nipples and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about like the new heroes, which were very 90s image inspired, like Youngblood and Spawn.
Right.
Taking the world over and sort of putting the old guys out to pasture.
Mm-hmm.
The old Justice League, who we know as Green Lantern and Wonder Woman and Batman and those guys. And I really enjoyed that dichotomy. When did you read this book?
I'm super old, so I guess it
he's
came out.
His beard right now.
Yeah,
his
right.
Beard.
I think it came out when I was in maybe like, oh man, maybe like 10th or 11th grade. Because I at that time I didn't have like a local comic shop, so I think I just came across it like at the mall, like the first issue, and I was like, "What is this? This is incredible!" Yeah. So that's probably when I first picked it up, and then probably a couple years later, because I think I only had like the first one and maybe the last one.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it was like weird, and then eventually I was able to pick up the trade and, you know,
the whole story,
extra pages and all that fun stuff.
What else were you reading around then? Like, what else were you into superhero wise?
Probably what you would expect. I was reading like all the probably 5 Superman titles at the time.
Okay.
Maybe Justice League and some X-Men here and there.
You weren't reading like, so the X-Men, that kind of works for the story where they were more edgy, clad in leather, everyone's having sex with each other. It's really like a soap opera, and that's what this New Guard felt like a lot.
Yeah,
the X-Men.
Definitely.
The Dark Knight Returns, you mentioned as well. There's the mutant characters in those.
Yep.
Both those books are kind of talking about like, DC is still relevant, you guys.
Yeah.
Why do you think that DC struggles so much to prove its relevancy every generation, like since the 40s?
I think it's because when you kind of step outside of people who are genuinely, you know, following the material regularly, there's like an outside view that, you know, these sort of classic comic characters are just sort of cookie cutter, like, you know, and that they just don't matter. But that's really sort of a superficial kind of look at any of the characters. I think they matter because of because of what they stand for.
Yeah.
And I think that they've never not been cool. It's just a matter of you know, who's writing it, and you know, it's like what's cool versus you know, what's the flavor of the month.
Sure,
you know, and
sure.
I think that you know, when you're talking about comics, like really you're talking about, you know, making money. And so that whole flavor of the month thing matters in, you know, in the moment, but not like in the grand scheme. So,
and that's something that Marvel and Image are really great at, is like take whatever is currently popular. They monetize very well, but there aren't really many Marvel books that people read over and over again, like the way that they'll read Dark Knight Returns or Kingdom Come. Like DC creates these fantastic graphic novels that stand the test of time, whereas like I don't know how many people are reading Spider-Man One More Day. Like Venom Volume 4,
you know? So like a lot of these stories are the Marvel stories that you're talking about, they're very much like in the moment, like they matter today, but they don't really matter tomorrow.
You know
like they'll do some big change to the character that can't be sustained, and then like, you know, 3 years from now, like it doesn't matter. Versus you know, like a really great, you know, like Dark Knight Returns, which is, it's self-contained and it's telling its own story. And it doesn't really need you to know anything else about Batman because they tell you everything you need to know. But if you have like this sort of outside knowledge, it enriches everything. And it makes it deeper, but it doesn't.
Especially in Kingdom Come, which is so many callbacks. Like, I feel like the continuity for Kingdom Come is whatever your memories of DC are.
Yeah.
It's not specifically anything.
Yeah.
It's just whatever you thought it was when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And it's true to the characters. That's all you need.
I think that when you're talking about these sort of legacy characters, that's what matters. Like the broad strokes.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like those things matter. And then, you know, these very sort of minute details don't, you know, like Superman was blue, and I think Superman was blue and electric at that time.
Yeah.
So like that doesn't matter. Nobody knows that but you and me.
So this felt more like real Superman to us when we were looking for like the guy. We're looking for Clark, and here he is. So,
yeah. Exactly. It's, I mean, they really kind of like Alex Ross's art. Like he looked back to the Max Fleischer Superman series from the 40s.
Yeah.
Was it the 40s or?
Yeah, it was
40s.
Late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah. You know, and that's like really classic stuff that still holds true till today. You know, and I think that's really kind of a testament to like how strong like Superman is like as a concept.
That's a good point. Even his logo colors harken back to that era with the black in lieu of the yellow. And this story, it's all about Superman having turned his back on humanity. Like, mm-hmm. he hasn't been Superman for 10 years. The Joker came to Metropolis and killed 89 people and one woman. And the one woman was Lois Lane.
Right.
And then a Magog, one of these new X-Men image 90s style heroes, very edgy. It looks like Cable, kind of, mm-hmm. murdered the Joker, and people approved of that.
Yeah.
And because Superman, his approval rating was so low and he knew people didn't want him around anymore, mm-hmm. he's all about acceptance and he's no longer accepted.
Yeah.
So he retired to the Fortress of Solitude for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he's no longer Clark, because Lois was Clark. Like, Lois is how he expressed that part of his identity.
Yeah.
No longer Superman, because he's not saving people. So mm-hmm. now he's Cal.
Right.
Which is the most fascinating aspect of his personality to me. It's who he it's who he is when he's alone. Mm-hmm. So it's who he genuinely is, right?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I don't really see it that way. I think Superman is Clark Kent. Like, I think he's always Clark Kent, no matter what happens. And I think that in Kingdom Come, he's a Clark Kent who doesn't, you know, he doesn't have anybody to talk to. So he leans on this other part of his heritage, which mm-hmm. is, that's fine. And it makes sense,
sure.
you know? And so he's kind of running away from Clark Kent,
yeah.
but that's who he is. I mean, ultimately, when the story ends, he puts the glasses back on, because that's sort of the resolution of the character, is like, that's who he really is. He doesn't have memories of Krypton. Like, he's mm-hmm. a guy that grew up in America with American parents. And, you know, that's where the whole truth, justice, and American way like comes from. You know, he's just a good guy. Mm-hmm. And then I think what Kingdom Come is really about, it's like Superman has his feelings hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just can't deal with it, you know?
Yeah, so he's vulnerable in a way I've seen before.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I know in this story, Wonder Woman won't call him Clark until that scene you just mentioned where he puts on the glasses.
Right.
She calls him Cal. And then when he finally comes back to the Earth and becomes part of humanity again, now mm-hmm. she'll gift him with the name Clark. And she gives him the glasses so that he can see better. And in a lot of ways, this whole story is about these heroes having their humanity stripped away for 10 years.
Yeah.
And just being these larger than life gods
mm-hmm.
and not being grounded at all, not like talking to the common man. And that's mm-hmm. why they're so out of touch. That's why the world is terrible. So it's about giving them back their humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that a lot in the comics and in the movies now, where they sort of, they don't pay attention as much to the alter egos. Like, I want to really like Bruce Wayne. I want to really like Clark Kent. Diana, I feel like I like a lot. I know her better than the Wonder Woman persona, because it's sort of the same person with her. She doesn't have like a, and then I change in a phone booth.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love when they hammer home the humanity of these characters.
Yeah,
and like you said, Clark getting his feelings hurt. It's so relatable.
Yeah, I mean, like that's the thing, like with the movies that I think Warner Brothers and DC has like really missed is the humanity. It's like they've gone out of their way to do like these huge spectacles, which I'm excited about. Like, I want to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm much more interested in I think Clark as a person, mm-hmm. and you know, Bruce Wayne as a person, and their sort of character development. Like, I want to you know, I want to go on a journey with them personally, so that when the action starts, that there's something at stake there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think in Man of Steel and in Superman or Batman versus Superman, I don't know what's going on in Superman's mind.
Yeah.
You know, other than to say, to look at him, he seems distraught and like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah, just burdened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, like I don't, watching those movies, I don't really understand why he's doing what he's doing, like what it is that motivates him. Mm-hmm. And to me, Superman is, he's doing what he's doing because he can't not, like he can't look away.
Sure.
Because that's the part, like you said, in Wonder Woman, you know, when she's in no man's land and like she's walked through, you know, all these things that are just appalling to her. And then she gets to a point and she's like, enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think that the Superman movies have been missing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, like where's that moment for Superman? I couldn't exactly tell you where it is.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I mean,
I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
like, the call to action moment, you understand in Wonder Woman, but in Superman, you don't really get that. Like, I just can't sit down anymore. Like, this looks like a job for Superman. It's an iconic part of the character.
Exactly.
And they don't give you that. This is like, now it's time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, maybe the problem is it happens at some point when we're not seeing it in the movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, because when the movie starts, he's already doing super things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the movies are a lot about acceptance and trying to like find his place in the world, which is very mm-hmm. relatable. And this book harkens back to that as well. Mm-hmm. Like trying to find his place, doesn't know where it is. When we see him, he's alone.
yeah,
and like a Matrix simulation of the Kansas farm, which no longer exists. It's really depressing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because it's he's living in his memories and not in reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that like blasphemous at all for you to read that as a kid? Like, it is a different take on Superman. He's given up. The never-ending battle has ended.
I don't think so, because the story that they were telling, I could see that. Like, have you played the video game Injustice?
I haven't, but I know the storyline. Yeah.
So like, I love that game.
Cool.
And the new one, I totally love it. And it's the same sort of premise, mm-hmm. you know, but in that game, like, Superman goes crazy, mm-hmm. you know, but in this one, in Kingdom Come, I think it's a more reasonable response from Superman. Like, I can see him, you know, with the loss of his wife, saying, you know, screw this.
Yeah. Just going away.
Yeah.
Instead of like imposing a dictatorship.
Yeah.
He just like F's off to the fortress.
Yeah. He's like. He's come to a point, and he sees what happens, and he just can't believe mm-hmm. that humanity doesn't agree with him.
Yeah. And there's a quote in there where they say that Superman's greatest failing is his inability to perceive himself as the inspiration that he is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Spectre says. It's his only weakness, because he's such a humble person.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't realize that when he retreats, all of the heroes of his generation retreat, because everyone follows his lead, even though he doesn't order them to.
Right.
He's just a leader as a person.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to me. Not to like make you embarrassed or anything, but you're a very cool, very moral guy, mm-hmm. and you're a leader too. You have this, you just mentioned your studio that you run.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you personally take inspiration from the character Superman? is it a conscious thing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Superman is like such an important thing throughout my entire life. I mean, you know, Superman got me into drawing. Like, cool. I draw because of Superman.
Why that character, can I ask?
I don't know. He just always, you know, kind of spoke to me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something really powerful about a guy that does the right thing because it's the right thing to do, I think.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he kind of reminds me of my dad a little.
Okay.
You know, my dad's a very, very do the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing.
That's excellent.
Kind of guy, so.
Was he a Superman fan too, or was he just a Superman?
I mean, he I think when he was a kid, he liked that stuff. Mm-hmm. As much as sort of anybody.
Sure,
no,
sure.
I wouldn't like.
It's just Americana.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he, I don't know. I mean,
he didn't
hand
you a book though and go like, son, this is where it's at.
No, he didn't do anything like that. Although he did tell me about he was the first person to tell me about the existence of Crypto the Superdog.
Oh man.
So yeah,
that's
that
important.
Was, that was big information for me at the time.
Best character.
No, I think, you know, Superman, I mean, and then even, so, you know, like, I think Superman 3, nobody likes Superman 3.
Mm.
I love Superman 3.
Oh, man. I'm going to come back and talk about that. That's amazing.
Yeah. But there's a point, you know, where, you know, when Superman is all, he's got the kryptonite in him, and he's at the bar, and he's like, you know, breaking the bottles, and he's just like, I'm Superman.
And he's wearing the muted colors, the Zack Snyder colors.
Yeah. And then, you know, he leaves the bar, and then the little boy comes out, and he's like, Superman, you're just in a slump. You can be great again. And, like, you know, like, even, you know, when I, in the occasions when I get down, like, I can kind of think about that and be like, well, you know, Superman was down. He can get back up, so.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. I'm a nerd.
No, that's great, man. That's good. I found this common thread. I've been doing this podcast for a little while now, mm-hmm. and all the guys I know who are really into Superman have really low points
mm-hmm.
that they have to get back out of. Okay. And, like, either it's one thing in their life or it's a consistent battle, a never-ending battle.
Yeah.
And I really like that a character that's so bright and powerful attracts mm-hmm. people who have, like dark moments in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
sort of interesting.
I think it's powerful to you know, be able to look at something that big and, you know, kind of take that and make it your own.
And the way that you spoke about him is if he's a real guy, like Superman got you to draw.
Yeah, Superman's cool.
He's cool. Yeah. I'll agree with that as the creator of this podcast. Superman's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So at what point did you decide, like, I love this character so much, I'm going to make this my career?
Always.
I respect that.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember as far back as like the first grade, going to career day and saying I wanted to be a comic artist.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Or actually, I think I said cartoonist. I didn't know what a comic book artist was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, cartoonist is even more sophisticated.
Right.
And that's kind of more what you are now, right? Because you write and draw and animation,
too. That's true. Yeah.
That's cool. Superman is your end goal, or is he your end goal as a creator? Do you want to work on him? Do you have like a story you want to tell with that character?
I mean, I definitely like it's definitely a goal of mine to draw Superman professionally. At one point it was definitely like the thing that I wanted to do, and then after that I would retire.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
No, now it's not the end game. It's a really big check that I've got to do. Mm-hmm.
Like a bucket list item.
Yeah, for sure. But I think large scale is really doing my own stuff.
Sure, sure.
And with the other members of Identity Comics doing our own shows and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. As someone who like toggles both the mainstream, like you do like Bill and Ted and Power Rangers and like really high profile Sonic the Hedgehog, like really high profile stuff, and then you do your independent stuff too. Are you inspired by Siegel and Shuster too, like as a creator of original properties? Do you like those guys maybe more than the character?
It's funny. I don't know that much about them. I mean, I guess I know more than the average guy knows about them.
Sure.
Like it's really encouraging to me that they were just teens when they created Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the first version of Superman that they had didn't really do well, and then they re-envisioned him. And
Hyperboy's gone through like three different changes too, right?
So. He's more than that, much more than that. But For them to have created something that is like this powerful and this long lasting is a really big thing for me. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about the struggle that they had to get like, creator rights or acknowledgements.
Yeah. Yeah. And selling the guy for $300 whole cloth.
Yeah.
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 It's a hard industry to work in, I find, for myself, and then for these guys, obviously. Ever experience that as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that if you're not careful, people will take advantage of you. And these guys were like teenagers, mm-hmm. and the entire business of entertainment is sort of, at that time, more than anything, set up to take advantage of people just like them.
Yeah, yeah. There's no creator owned anything in the 30s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, I'm certainly aware of those things, and we really try to keep an eye out for pitfalls and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that when you were reading this book when it came out initially, that you were reading all the Superman titles, you were like aware of all that stuff. Have you kept up with the comics as intensely as an adult as when you were a kid?
No. I would say it's two reasons. Initially, I stopped like really hardcore collecting just because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. I at one point I worked at a comic shop. And
which store?
It was Comics MD in Maryland. I don't think they're in business anymore.
Hmm. Because you left.
Pretty much,
like, Jerry's gone. They
called it a quit as soon as I left.
It's like Kingdom Come. You stop being a leader.
But no, back then, like I was reading everything, like right up through what was happening. Then one of those crises, maybe like the second one, the third one was the third crisis, Final Crisis.
I think so. People are gonna screaming in their podcast right now because they know and we don't. But that sounds right to me.
Yeah, like Final Crisis,
the Grant Morrison one, Final Crisis.
Yeah. Final Crisis and. Before that was it 52?
Yeah.
With the thing that was coming out every week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had all that stuff and I was getting it and I wasn't reading it.
Oh.
And
isn't that hard when you like hit that point where you're like, oh, I don't kind of care if I miss this month, and you're like, oh, I've crossed a threshold.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then, at some point I was just like, I gotta make a change here. So, from that point I was more of a casual collector. So, I'll pick up things like when they interest me, when I like the artist, when I like the writer.
It's funny that like Kingdom Come has affected the modern market in ways that they never saw back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like the Robin they have currently is in Kingdom Come. He's part of the Human Liberation Front as an adult. He, mm-hmm. He's Lex Luthor's protege.
Yeah.
The first time we ever saw this kid as like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool. The Red Robin costume that they had in DC for a while came from this book.
Mm-hmm.
They threw a lot of hints that DC, this is the definitive end of DC.
Yeah.
And they keep like showing costumes tending towards that way. And Magog is actually in the DC universe now as a character.
Well, he was around before. Wait, Magog? I think I was seeing Gog.
There's Magog. Gog and there's Magog.
Yeah, there's definitely both of them. I think I was seeing Gog earlier. I think that was around the time that I really stopped reading Superman books, because I was like, this is not fun.
Oh, well, this book is really fun. I'm glad you chose this one.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, too. Like, it's Alex Ross. You have a style that isn't, like, super photorealistic, but you appreciate this kind of art as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan of a lot of different styles. I think it's hard not to like Alex Ross's stuff. I think, you know, when his versions of all these characters, like you said, like, they feel like an amalgam of sort of the best versions of what these characters are. And then, you know, even at that, like, they're that idea, but like extrapolated forward, except for Wonder Woman, who's like the same.
She's iconic and unchanging as a goddess would be.
Yeah.
I really like that this book is super bleak. Like, Lois Lane gets murdered at the Daily Planet by the Joker, and Superman quit being Superman for 10 years and turned his back on humanity, and it's really dark. But whenever you see posters for it, there's like shining light behind them. Whenever anyone speaks of it, they're smiling and happy. Like, it's the same kind of material as a Man of Steel, but it's presented wholly differently, and that fascinates me. No one ever has nerd rage at Kingdom Come. Everyone loves it and thinks it's a positive story.
Yeah.
Is that just the ending, or why is it that way? Because it's a really bleak story.
I don't think it's just... Well, the ending is very satisfying.
So tell us the ending, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah. So, man, it's a lot to unpack. So everything comes to a head. Superman has collected all these sort of anti-heroes that he's tried to rehabilitate, but he's got them in this prison that looks like the Legion of Doom headquarters, which is neat. And then Wonder Woman is going to... I think she's going there to kill them all. And so the Gog breaks, all the different factions come together. Superman has a quick chat with Batman to try to rally his troops to come in. So like everyone comes together and it just ends up being like this big mishmash Armageddon. It's the superhero fight. Like, this is the one. Like, there's no other fight that comes close.
And
like,
every super person on the planet is fighting each other.
Yeah.
And they're not doing it to save humanity or to condemn humanity. They're just fighting each other to fight each other.
Yeah.
And
And it's like, as you're reading the book, I think what's powerful is that you can feel it coming to this, but you don't know what would have stopped it. Like, you don't know, like, there's no point that you can say, well, if they just did this, then all this could have been avoided. It has this sort of like real life ness to it.
This
inevitability,
these leaders just fighting each other for just because they hate each other and not thinking of the people they're supposed to represent. We have this now with like North Korea and the US threatening to nuke each other, and like, not, you're elected to serve people, not to hurt each other. And that's what these heroes have lost sight of too. It's the humanity.
And then, so, you know, Superman at the end, he's lost control of his Justice League, and Wonder Woman is pressing in just for the fight. Like, she's ready to go.
She wants to end it, which means death and murder.
Yeah, they want to just kill them all. And Superman, he because he's Superman, what he really doesn't want is for any of these people to die.
Yeah, he respects life in general. Yeah.
And so one of the things that I think is really cool is that they don't depower him. If anything, they've made him more powerful.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets there and he believes that he's physically powerful enough to stop the fight, which maybe he can. And then at the same time, humanity decides that this would be a great time to just end the superhero problem. So they...
Yeah, they're all in the same place. So just nuke them.
So they send out a bunch of nukes. And then I think Superman stops...
Superman tries to stop them, and then Billy Batson pushes them away, and doesn't he grab them?
Yeah, but there's a bunch of them. Batman stops one, Wonder Woman stops one, and Superman he can stop the last one, but Captain Marvel shows up, and boom, you know, he's like the guy who his sort of existence is like almost like kryptonite to Superman. So like they're a very evenly matched fight. But even in that, like, Superman is just, he's Superman and he wins this fight. But he still has this dilemma on his hands. So he puts it to Billy Batson, who he feels like is still living in both worlds. He's human and superhuman.
Yeah, yeah.
So he gives Billy Batson the opportunity to make the decision on who lives and who dies.
Yeah, yeah. Humans or superheroes. Right. And Clark will just stand by again and let him make the decision
because right.
he has more authority than he does.
Well, no, that's what he says, though, right? Yeah, that's what he says. He says he wants him to understand what's going to happen because Superman has made his choice. Mm-hmm. He's going to try to save everyone and stop the bomb. Mm-hmm. That's what he's going to do. And so he takes off. Mm-hmm. But then Captain Marvel grabs him and throws him to the ground. And then Captain Marvel catches the bomb and then he blows it up above the ground. And so he kills a bunch of them, but not all of them. And so there's this whole thing. Superman thinks everyone's dead. And then he flies over to the UN and he's planning on killing everyone. But then, we haven't talked about the Observer. He gets talked down by the outside Observer, and it's very satisfying. Superman has an opportunity to see what he's doing and say, well, this is where we are, but we can move forward from here.
So speaking of observers, let's take a quick break, and you guys can go observe these commercials by these fine subsidiaries of LexCorp. And we'll be right back. All right, and we're back. So you were talking about the Observer through this book. It's a very important narrative device. There's a character called Norman McKay, who is was he Protestant?
He's a preacher. I forget what his denomination is.
Yeah, he's a Christian clergyman.
Yeah.
And he meets the Spectre.
Yeah.
And throughout the entire book, he's observing these stories at the same pace that we are. Like, the Spectre is showing him this so he can be an observer for the end of time, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the Spectre knows what's going to happen. Like, he's aware of how these events transpire. Mm-hmm. But the Spectre, who is usually he's bonded to a human host, mm-hmm. but he himself over time has lost his humanity. So he can't tell, just like Superman, he can't tell who's at fault. Mm-hmm. And he needs Norman McKay to watch and to decide for him so that he can punish whoever is guilty.
Sure, sure. I like that idea a lot, that he can't, I didn't catch that, I think, that he couldn't judge it accurately, and he's the human host to do so. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just like part of the spell or something, but yeah, that's mm-hmm. cool that he's actually actively judging these characters.
Yeah.
And I like that, so the Observer like talks to Superman at the end of it and kind of talks him down from ending the world, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, he appeals to Superman's humanity, mm-hmm. you know, he calls him Clark, and he tells him to, you know, take a breather, and, you know, to... that he is actually forgetting what human beings feel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and to really just kind of come back to Earth.
And he sort of says that was what Clark was in him, that he turned his back on Clark, and he says, of all the things you can do, all your powers, the greatest has always been your instinctive knowledge of right and wrong.
Yeah.
And whenever anything went down, you knew what to do, and now you've lost that because you're not among us anymore. So he like re-gifts him the Clark persona.
Yeah.
And then Superman's able to like make decisions accurately and become like a man again and not just a force of nature.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like the genius of like what Mark Waid did for the story and for Superman is like he gets what makes Superman Superman. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the story resonates so well because it's really not about, you know, what Superman can punch or, mm-hmm. you know, what he can bend or break. Like, those things are cool and, you know, it's certainly part of the reason why I like them.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I like to draw.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I think, you know, the idea that he will make the right decision mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
And there's a great parallel there with Norman and the Spectre then, right? Because the Spectre is Superman.
Right.
And then Norman's Clark Kent.
Yeah,
directing the force.
Yep.
And I feel like as we move forward into the future, the more powerful that we get as human beings, like individually, and especially as people with leadership positions, mm-hmm. we have to remain tethered to that humanity.
Yeah.
Especially when we have the power to like press a button and nuke an entire country
or
write a Facebook post that'll upset your whole family. Like even smaller scale stuff.
Yeah.
Like we're so powerful now that it's almost like having superpowers.
Yeah.
And you have to be respectful of that and mindful of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then I really like the end, like the very, very end, the epilogue of the story, mm-hmm. where we see that Clark and Diana have become friends again.
Yeah.
And then more than friends, right. She's pregnant with Clark's baby. Mm-hmm. And they ask Batman to be the godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a whole new generation of heroes. Because that's a very positive ending. Like, humanity's not going to be over.
Mm-hmm.
The Kingdom Come talks about the end of days all the time.
Yeah.
And the actual Bible that it's quoting constantly talks about the end of days all the time.
Right.
And both those books, those are just metaphors, right? Because as a human person, we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So we are in the last days because our lives are the last days.
Mm.
So this reminds us that when we die, there will be more.
Yeah.
There's always going to be more Superman stories. There's going to be Superman podcasts when you and I are dead talking about this podcast. You know, there's going to be Hyper Boy stories written by other authors after they've... Yeah. So the idea that nothing ends is very positive. And I feel like that is it's a bittersweet positive ending for this that we don't see in other more dark 90s gritty comics of the era.
Well, you know, I mean, you say that, but even Dark Knight Returns has that same sort of idea where Batman has his he's training, he's turned the mutants into his like bat kids.
Yeah, the sons of the bat.
Yeah, so like if you don't pay attention to any of the sequels, then it ends with this hope. And a wink and a nod from Superman.
You're right. Yeah, that book by itself, though, feels like... I feel like Bruce Wayne should have died in that and inspired... And, like, because it's equally as powerful that they carry on his tradition.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, so it's like, I'm going to live forever. And it feels like the creators... And, like Frank Miller kind of won't get off the stage as an older... And that's really interesting that he's paralleling that Bruce Wayne idea.
Mm-hmm.
I like in Kingdom Come, we're like, yeah, we're going to die, and there's going to be new people, and that's okay. That's how life works. That's God's mysterious plan for us all. I think that's really... that's something that superheroes need to help us deal with more, like dying with dignity, because they don't ever do that. They always come back to life over and over again.
Well, so in Dark Knight Returns, do you think, again, excluding the sequels, because I just read it as its own thing, when at the end, does it feel like Batman is retired, or does it feel like... Because I guess I kind of got the feeling that he was retired and passing on his torch. But it could definitely be seen as he refuses to let go.
I feel like it's that he refuses. He's like, he's still controlling.
Yeah.
And but now he's controlling an army rather than just like one person or just himself. Like he's rejuvenated and he's like, he's more Batman than he's ever been. So he's stronger and he's more of a leader and he's smarter. He's the utmost Batman.
I see.
And it felt like that was a story where he should have died and he should have passed. And they do that in the movies too, with the Dark Knight Rises, where like when he should have been a messianic figure, they're like, and then he's in a cafe with Catwoman and Elephant Man. Like, it's just let these guys go. We're all going to go somewhat.
Yeah.
And like, we need mythology helps us deal with that.
Yeah.
Like the last Robin Hood story is where he just shoots an arrow and then wherever it lands is where it's going to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's this awesome, like, I chose everything in my life. Mm-hmm. No one ever told me what to do. I'm the ultimate rebel. I even chose where I'm going to be buried. Like, it's this cool rebellious. There's all of our other myths have death stories.
Yeah.
And then these kind of don't. And that's hard.
Well, I mean, that's the capitalism.
I know, it's so weird. So yesterday was Batman Day, right?
Yeah.
And did you do any signings or anything?
I didn't. I was playing video games.
Batman video games?
Yes.
Okay, I respect that. But so that's a modern holiday, right? I could tell you so many more things about Batman than I could about Saint Valentine or Saint Patrick. And we're celebrating the birth of a hero that everyone in our culture respects, and we know his stories and they help us lead. Like, I know Saint Patrick hates snakes. That's all I know about him.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he wants me to do when I'm facing a life or death situation. And it's the capitalism going into religion, going into mythology.
Yeah.
It's this weird mix of all of them.
Yeah.
And I feel like you and I both have that with Superman. We see him almost as like a spiritual figure.
Yeah.
But you're a spiritual guy too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does that ever, do you see direct parallels with your faith and your Superman fandom?
I don't. I know. I mean, like, Superman has so many religious allegories. I mean, with Old Testament and New Testament, like, you can't not see it. I just, I am just more interested in the, I don't want to say face value, but like, you know, the superness.
Sure, sure. That's a healthy relationship to it that I have, for sure. So kudos for you.
Yeah, I mean, I just, I don't know. I just see him that way, and I think maybe when I was younger, I probably was even more into Superman than I am now. Mm-hmm. I think again, like maybe some of the just being old now, you know, like I just see things a little differently. But I think what I liked about Superman when I was a kid, like those things are what I really hold on to. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much that like when I read Superman stories today, they don't have the impact that they had when I was a kid.
Okay.
So you know, I mean, it could be a bunch of different things. You know, I'm more into creating my own stories these days. So
sure.
That could have something to do with it. Mm-hmm. And it might just be the creator in me looking at these things and saying, well, this is what I would do.
Yeah, it's hard to divorce yourself from that, right? Yeah. You know how the sausage gets made. You know actually the guys and girls who are writing and drawing it. And
yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hyperboy, which is your own creation, mm-hmm. is a black character.
Yeah.
Which Superman is not. Shocker. I don't want to blow your mind, Jerry.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed this before.
Whoa.
And I think it's really cool to have characters that you can relate to in stories.
Yeah.
Clearly, you and I can both relate to Superman, even though we're not the exact same ethnicity of the character or the mm-hmm. same, like, we're not from Kansas. We
right.
can't fly. Like,
yeah.
But there's a human core, but also just visually,
yeah.
I think it's fun to be able to identify quickly with stuff.
Yeah.
I just bought a bunch of Poe Dameron comics for no reason. so can you talk to me about being a young black fan of Superman and if that impacted that fandom at all?
Or, you know.
Were you, like, pressured into watching the terrible Steel movie at any point?
Yeah.
With Shaq.
Believe me, I wasn't pressured. I was happily gave the theater my dollars.
Heck yeah.
I love Shaq. Yeah, so I mean, I'm like just such a huge Superman fan that, like,
yeah.
And I
was
really,
he.
Yeah, when the Steel character came out, like, that, you know, the death and return of Superman was, you know, not, it wasn't when I started reading comics, but it was when I first started collecting.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, John Bogdanov, his art was just like, it just blew me away. Like, I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, I loved it.
Sure, sure.
And the character was just like, just really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I love Steel.
Yeah. And
I read that every Easter, The Death and Return.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. But yeah, I mean, it's important to have, you know, characters that look like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, growing up, there weren't characters that look like me,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a big deal sort of until you realize that.
Yeah.
And you know, when you do realize it, it's like, oh, you know, and you look around and like, it's like, well, why aren't there? I think that the thing that I don't like is when people take characters like, say, Superman. This isn't to say that I don't like Steel, because I do, mm-hmm. but to take a character like Superman and then say, well, let's make a black Superman. Like, and like throw an S on his chest,
yeah.
and now he's black Superman. Like, I don't really like that as a cure all.
Can we talk about that for like a long time? Because that's
yeah,
a
sure.
pet peeve of mine too.
Yeah.
So tell me why you don't like that, please.
Because it's pandering.
Mm-hmm.
It's pandering, and then it's like, I don't think it really serves the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what. And it isn't to say that it can't be done well, but what I'm talking about is like just this sort of blanket thing. And
yeah,
it's not
yeah.
just like with characters of color.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens with female characters,
yes.
and probably more frequently, like, again, like, not that I don't like Supergirl, because I love her.
Yeah, yeah.
But Supergirl is like, it's like, well, why can't she just be like some other thing?
My mom calls her Lady Superman.
Yeah.
Just because she's...
I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it.
It's really... So, I have a feeling about this, right? I think that, like, when you diversify comics, which I'm a huge advocate and proponent, and I actively try to do with my career for selfish reasons, getting rid of someone else's character to put yours in teaches them that diversity means death. Like, they kill off white characters
mm-hmm.
to make characters of color.
Right.
And then, so, like, oh, so... That's violence,
right?
And you're taking away, in order to for you to get what you want, you have to take away what I want,
mm-hmm.
and that's not the case. We
right.
can all have comics,
yeah, yeah.
Like I can,
I see what you're saying.
Have
so,
Hyperboy next to Hawkeye on the
yeah,
shelf. You know?
Like I don't read Iron Man or anything like that, but like I know that I think they killed Iron Man recently. Yeah. And then like they replaced him with like a black female character.
And she's cool. And she even has her own name, Ironheart. Like, why can't we have like her own?
Yeah.
Like I love War Machine, and he's like a different dude. Yeah.
Like just do that. You know, like, you don't have to get rid of, I don't know.
And give them all the marketing that you would a white character. Like, I was driving by, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, with Warner Brothers, Best Man Burbank. And so there's this huge billboard, and it has all the super characters they have right now. They have Arrow and Supergirl and Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. And they all had exact dates for the next seasons, like season 8 premieres, season 3 premieres. Mm-hmm. And they had Black Lightning, which I'm amped about. Mm-hmm. And then it said mid-season.
Oh, wow.
Which means that he's just, whatever show gets canceled, they're going to plug him in there for a season that's half as long as one of the other seasons would be. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're not trying to launch this character with their best foot forward.
Yeah.
They're just like, we'll do it to say we're not racist because Marvel did Black Panther, so we have to do our black guy too. And, like, you can kind of feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really weird.
Yeah.
Like, you have to create characters and then, like, market the hell out of them and make sure they're as big as these other ones.
Yeah. I mean, you can't expect it to succeed if you don't put the resources behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I mean.
And they don't put resources behind it, and then it fails. And then they don't. And then they go like, "Well, no one wants a black character because it failed. No one wants a Latino character because it failed." And like, you didn't try in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta like, if you do high quality stories, you know, then people will enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, you have to give it a little time, spend some money on it. Just, you know, anything worth having costs money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so
it's super weirdly racist against white people too, because it assumes that they won't buy anything that it's not white, like that they're dumb and racist, and that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you loved Superman even though his skin's different than yours, and like someone else would do the same thing with Hyperboy.
Yeah,
like, because it's just a cool story, and it's all kids care about, and it's all adults care about too.
Yeah,
so I love that.
Yeah, I mean, you just gotta put that stuff out there. I mean, it's just, you know, I think partly. The issue is that the people in who are sort of hired to do these things are not as diverse as they should be.
Yeah.
And when that happens, what happens is like, you know, you just don't think outside of how you think.
And,
you know what I mean?
They're not at fault. They're not evil for doing that.
Yeah, it's a byproduct of how like all these things are set up. So if you get a more diverse creative unit, then you'll start to see more of a diverse you know, creative like projects out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and I found that like the more, I don't know, it's hard because like the more you talk about this stuff, the more you're seeing it's hard to work with, and the less jobs you get, and that's pretty difficult.
That is true. That's definitely true, because people don't want a hard time. They want, you know, it's a troublemaker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of a thing, you know, but, you know, that's why, you know, you gotta create, you know, that's why, you know, that's why Identity Comics is doing the characters that we're doing. Like, it's not like we're setting out to just like make a bunch of like black characters or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, they're just cool characters.
Yeah, like, you know, we're doing what feels right.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and it feels more realistic because it looks like the world around us and stuff. I'm really inspired by you and your whole crew for doing that, by like working in the mainstream and then also creating your own stuff. That seems like impossibly hard. You have like 3 full-time jobs. How do you find the time to do that? Are you a Kryptonian? I'm gonna out you right now.
Sure, yeah. From Kandor, I think.
Yeah, dude,
definitely Kandor. Yeah. No, I mean we love it. You know, I think is what it boils down to, is that we love what we do. We love to draw. We, you know, and working together allows us to stay positive and stay motivated, because it's not like the easiest thing in the world. You know, and then you're creating, and you're putting you know, pieces of yourself out there, you know, for people to critique. Like, I just recently did a cover for, I won't say what it was, but I did a cover for like a big sort of project.
Okay. Comic?
And like, I guess it's been started to be promoted, and I saw on Tumblr like people were just like hating it.
Oh,
like,
no, why?
They just didn't like the drawing.
I remember when you worked on Sonic and you got like really weird hate mail.
Yeah.
From a couple Sonic people.
Yeah, man. I mean, when you're working on like these projects that, you know, people are really, really close to, they take it personally. And I get that. Like, I understand what it's like to be a fan, but I think, you know, for me, like, I just wanted to do something fun. With Sonic, like, I, you know, and I wouldn't even say, like, I did my version of Sonic. Like, Sonic is very particular. Like, Archie is like, it's got to be like this. Mm. So, you know, I did what they asked. Mm. And
I loved your work on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But it's like, you know, the fans were used to a particular artist. Mm. And, you know, and I get that. Like, it's tough to, like, step into somebody else's shoes when they're, you know, they're looking for that guy. And then I come in and they're like, wait, you're not him. You know, you're trying to fool me here. So, you know, I get that, too. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's like people will just say that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they don't care.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like the least superheroic kind of language they use to talk about too. And like, how are you a fan of the things you think you like if you're being like a jerk on the internet to a stranger this way?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just trying to bring you joy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's so funny, man, because like I know, you know, people like to trash like Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel. I'm just like, well, if you don't like it, then don't like it. You're like, you know, like Man of Steel is not like my favorite Superman movie, but like it's not so bad. It's not like they disrespected the character and they were just like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not horrible.
I respect how zen you are about this stuff, because out of all the Superman guests I've had, you are the most laid back about it. Because people, like, other folks act like they were personally wounded by stories, or like it's just such a viscerally painful thing. Like, you seem to have your priorities more in check. And what's that all about? How do you get so adult?
It's entertainment. You know what I mean? Like, I think as creators, like, we're in a unique position to know what it's like to be on both sides of that equation. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I can tell you for sure that the people who work on, you know, these DC movies, like, they're not setting out to do something that you're going to hate.
Of course not.
Like, I promise that's not the case.
Yeah.
You know, they really, I mean, when you watch these movies, if you can't tell that they really tried hard to do something you're going to enjoy, like, you're blind. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, they really, like, even down to, like, all the Easter eggs that are in both of those movies.
The Wayne Corp satellites and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, they really tried hard to make everybody enjoy it. But you can't please everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't, you know? And I think that as creators, like, we are in a position to know what it's like to be on the side of the guys that, like, you know, they didn't like it.
And in Kingdom Come, even Superman couldn't please everybody.
Yeah. Right?
Even he had his critics and detractors, and he chose to walk away from it, and the world almost ended. So if you're listening, don't read the comments like Superman. They should reissue it and call it Kingdom Come, Don't Read the Comments.
Yeah. Oh, man, definitely. Well, so, and fortunately, like, I only read, like, I think two of the comments, and I had, I think my wife and
smacks Penny.
Penny and Brian, like, they read it and they were like, don't read it. And I was like, you're right. So, yeah, I mean, it can be harsh out there. Like, you know, people are, they're particular, you know, like they want what they want. And I get that. But,
sure.
You know, as creators, we have to do, you know, what works for us. And then, you know, there's also the fact that when you're working on a lot of these projects, it's art by committee. You know what I mean? It's not like
no one understands that. It's not all your decisions, but you just have to, like, shoulder all the blame for it. And it could be like a Sega licensor from Japan who you've never spoken to.
I mean, like, when you're working on these licensed properties, like, you know, there are at least three other people, you know, and possibly like a group of people, you know, who has to see it. They give you notes, you make changes. They give you notes, you make changes. They give you notes, you can complete it. I've completed projects, you know, a few times, and they've been colored and then come back to me, and I've had to make like big changes. So
that's hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's the end piece isn't always what I saw. You know, going into it, but, you know, it's, I always feel like it's high quality professional work, you know? I think sometimes fans don't get that, but You know, we're definitely trying to make you happy.
Yeah. And it's hard. And I like that, just like Superman, you have your own Justice League with Penny and Brian, of like also very capable creators.
Oh man, they're super talented. Penny is she's doing design work on some new animated stuff, and she really killing them at shows. Like, she's just like crazy busy.
Her art is so, I want to work with her like so badly. She's looking like the top three artists that I want to work with. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, she's not too big of a fan of drawing comics, so yeah. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
I want like a cover. She does like Disney.
Oh, she'll definitely do a cover.
I would love
like
that.
She'd definitely do that. And Brian, like, he's incredible. Like, we
totally.
Yeah, like, he and I, like, we really work well off each other. Like, he inspires me to do better and better. Mm-hmm. And I do the same thing for him. Like, he prevents me from stagnating. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's cool to have a team like that.
I like that a lot. And that's why people always make fun of the Justice League, because they're like, Superman could just do everything himself. But like, why would you want to?
Yeah.
And like, it's so much easier. Like, Superman's a guy who has the same kind of emotions that we have as human beings. Mm-hmm. And like, being alone wrecked him in this story.
Yeah.
And then having a crew saved him.
Yep.
So it's cool that we can take some inspiration from that in our own daily lives and try to have friendships that way. I'm bad at socializing, so I have this podcast. And this podcast is my way to like see friends every once in a while. I'm like, hey, let's talk about Superman for an hour.
I'm all about it, man. I when I first got out here, the three of us went and we took a tour at DC. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty incredible. I got to talk to some of the editors.
That's cool. We have a mutual friend there, Paul Kaminsky.
Yeah, Paul was he was taking us around. We had lunch and everything. He's super
one of
cool
the
guy.
Best dudes in comics.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you know, we were just like in the whole DC magic, mm-hmm. and just talking about Superman and stuff.
It's like Willy Wonka's factory in there. It's so awesome.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So if you were a young Jerry Gaylord, just picking up the first issue of Kingdom Come and then tuning into this podcast, what would you want the older Jerry to say to that young man? Like, talk to our young Superman fans who want to have a career like you in the arts, creating comics and cartoons and being friends with guys like me.
You know, the important thing is to really, it's tough to get in. It is tough. It's not like the easiest thing in the world. So really the most important thing is to first be great at drawing. Mm-hmm. If you want to be an artist, be great at it. You know, work at it really, really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, spend the time, learn how to do the perspective and, you know, like not just the incredible figures, but the backgrounds and all that fun stuff. And really get out there, do some conventions, meet people, you know, knowing people, mm-hmm. like meeting people and having relationships is as important as being an amazing artist.
Because that's where your humanity is, right? That's what stay tethered to humanity, or else you'll turn your back and grow a ponytail.
Absolutely.
And put black in your logo.
Absolutely.
Jerry, thank you so much for coming out today, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can we please plug your stuff so people can see your amazing art? Where are you on Twitter and Facebook and all that jazz?
On Twitter, I am TheFranchise with a Z. On Instagram, which is where I post most frequently, I'm The Franchise Live, so The Franchise with a Z again. My website is thefranchiselive.com. Mm-hmm. And other than that, you can just Google Jerry Gaylord, I guess. I'll pop up.
I do often. Late at night, just Google Jerry Gaylord. All right, thanks again, man.
No, man, thanks for having me.
Ooh, Super Friends with Eric Esquivel.